What's that sound, Brady? It's 12 drummers drumming.
Ah, yeah. It's the
12th day of Hello Internet Christmas.
Before we started, there was this huge pile of unopened envelopes. And now we've got lots of open cards here and things we've talked about. We still have a very large pile of
like, if someone came in at the beginning and looked at our pile of envelopes, and then they came in now, they would not be impressed by the dent that we have made in this pile. Even though I feel like we've opened a lot of envelopes and we've gone through a ton of things. Yeah. And we have a big pile of garbage, right? Yeah. Of like discarded envelopes to get rid of. When you look at the pile that is remaining, it is not an impressive amount of progress that we have made.
I think we've hardly made a dent, but we can slightly increase the size of that dent by doing just a few more cards today, you think?
Let's do a few more to end the holiday season.
Well, that's a lovely card. That's like a handmade hand, like, what's that, crocheted or?
Yeah, we have like an embroidered or crocheted.
Cross stitch, is it?
Cross stitch. I don't know the difference between these words. An embroidered wreath. And this is Stefan from Zurich. And for Dr. Brady and Gray.
I swear more people have called me Dr. Brady than not, which is crazy.
I think that is true. I think the majority of these cards are addressed to Dr. Brady. It says, if we ever populate Mars or other planets, will there be nations on Mars? Or will there not be nations on Mars? Merry Christmas to you and your families.
That sounds like a Gray question to me.
And yes, this is a handmade card by his mother.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
It's lovely. Tell your mother that she is a true talent, Stefan. Yes. I think that's cross-stitch. I don't know what these needlework things are all called.
I was gonna say, do you really know the difference between cross-stitch and whatever other words you were saying? I have no idea.
I got no idea. So when Mars is colonized, do you think it's going to like go the Earth model and end up like, you know, nations and things like that?
I don't know. I don't know how it's going to end up. I'm so heavily biased by reading the Red Mars books where it's all just sort of corporate colonies and there isn't exactly like a nation structure, but I don't know. It feels like nations are ways that humans are just going to inevitably arrange themselves just purely for the power struggles of controlling resources. People may have very idealistic ideas about how they want Mars to run before everybody gets there, but ultimately it's going to be like, well, it's far away from Earth and people want to control territory or land or resources on the planet. And I think you're going to kind of end up with these sorts of divisions that, if they're not nations in name, they're nations in function. That'd be my guess anyway, but I don't know. I don't know.
Did you see the new probe that landed on Mars the other day?
No.
You missed it? Was it InSight?
Did it discover water on Mars?
Not yet, and it has not. Voyager 2 left the solar system the other day, though.
Oh, did it really?
No. But no water on Mars.
I'm so glad to hear that.
It was a good landing, though. Landing stuff on Mars is still cool.
It will never not be cool. Yeah. It's always impressive.
Do you think, like, I know this is an often asked question, and we would have discussed it before, but given like the last year or two of progress and news and things, if you don't live for 1,000 years,
of course,
and you have like a normal lifespan, do you think you will see a human on Mars while you're still alive? If you have a normal...
If I was going to bet on it, I'd say yes.
Yep.
I would bet that I would see a human on Mars.
Yeah.
In the remainder of a normal human lifespan.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the same?
Yes. I think maybe just.
Just?
Maybe just. If I eat more carrots and peas.
Well, I was going to ask, is it just because you're older than me or is it just because you're less confident than me?
Bit of both. Yeah.
Just as a thing to note, I didn't say we'll see a human on Mars and safely return.
Right.
just to be clear, I'm making the bet of human on Mars and the human lands and they're alive when they land. That's the bet.
A 19-year-old physics student named William has sent a beautiful homemade piece of art, which looks like, what is that, a robin redbreast or some kind of bird?
Yeah, that's a red-breasted robin.
Beautiful picture to Graham Brady. Physics student at university. However, I've always been a creative person, this card, for example, and my dream job is actually to be a film director. My question is, how do you choose between rational life choices and risky choices in pursuit of your true dreams and desires?
What do you think, Brady?
I can't think of many decisions I've taken that I would classify as risky.
Hmm.
I don't think I'm like the super rational dude who thinks things through to the extent that you think about things, but I still think my decisions are quite conservative and normal, and I can think of very few decisions I've made in life that you would classify as a risk.
Mm.
So my answer, I can't answer the question, therefore. I'm quite risk averse.
Yeah, I think something like this, where particularly if someone wants to do something like filmmaking, is also just reminds me of a thing that I use to tell students as well. It's like, for some classes of jobs, you don't need anybody's permission to start. And if you have interest in doing those things, you should just start now and see if you get any kind of positive feedback. I guess I feel the same way that you do, that there are things that I have done, they're risky, but they're not risky without reason. You have positive feedback that this is a good idea, that like making YouTube videos professionally is maybe not a crazy idea because you've made a bunch that have received traction. And I think something like filmmaking is the same thing. Like, you can make shorts on YouTube and just give it a shot and see if you get any kind of positive feedback or not. So yeah, I think calculated risks are what we want in life.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. I haven't made risky decisions, but I also acknowledge that I've had a lot of luck. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, I've been privileged to have opportunities that maybe I didn't deserve. So I'm not saying, you know, I've got where I am because I made excellent decisions, but I just haven't made risky decisions. You know, I left a secure staff job at the BBC, but I didn't do that until I felt so confident that the YouTube stuff was going to be more successful. That was when, like, I almost was forced to leave the BBC because I couldn't do the stuff I wanted to do on YouTube anymore. So I'm not that guy who said, you know, I've got a dream and I'm going to quit my job and go and cruise the rivers of South America looking for my dream. I just, you know.
Yeah. It's good to think of life. Life is a game, but it's a game that's like poker, where there's an element of randomness, but you can still make good or bad decisions within that element of randomness.
You've got to know when to hold them and when to fold them.
Yes, you need to know when to hold them and you need to know when to fold them.
Yeah.
You need to know when to walk away.
Yeah.
You need to know when to run.
That's right.
I hope that's helpful.
I saw him, Kenny Rogers, at Glastonbury, and that song was just the best. he did it twice. He did like all his hits, and he did that one, and then he did Islands in the Stream.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end, he said, all right, I'm going to do one last song for you all. Do you want that one or do you want Islands in the Stream? And everyone yelled for the one they wanted, and then he just did both.
You know what I like about that? That's a man who knows what the people want. Yeah. You know what? If I'm seeing Kenny Rogers, I want to hear The Gambler twice.
Exactly. You know, I thought he was so funny and all these one-liners were great, and I thought, oh, that was a good laugh. So that night I got home and decided to watch some YouTube videos of his other live performances to see, is he always like that? All the same jokes, all the same one-liners. It was an absolute carbon copy. Oh, look at this one. This one comes from Andy Matthew Hazel and Audrey the Second. Hello, Internet Podcast guys. Yes, we named our Chihuahua after the original Audrey. Officially, she is Audrey 2, a nod to the Little Shop of Horrors and Lisa's cat on The Simpsons. Her name is a pop culture Rorschach test leading to assumptions about Ms. Hepburn and more. Question, how many times and in what media have your intellectual properties been requested to be used? Oh, gosh. Many.
Many, many times. Permission granted, basically never.
Yeah.
How do you feel about there being an Audrey too? Because, you know, parents sometimes get possessive about the names that they give their children.
Well, guess what? There's a picture here of Audrey too. This is Audrey too with another dog called Hazel.
They're both sticking their tongues out.
They are.
It's very cute.
I'm all right with it.
Yeah?
I'm all right with it. I think like imitation is the highest form of flattery, isn't it?
Right. Just like with people using your intellectual property, imitation is the highest form of flattery.
Imitation is okay. Freebooting and theft, not so cool.
Not so cool. Okay. We've got another season's greetings, pets on the front, neat handwriting in the card.
But not super easy to read.
But divided into topics. Also what I like, it's name pronunciation guide. So this is from Lucia. The topic is celebrity culture.
Hmm.
She notices that many people think that their lives are not meaningful if they aren't remembered somehow or if they haven't changed the world. Do you think this idea about celebrity culture is harmful or if it's good for people? Any thoughts on celebrity culture? That's what she's looking for. What do you think about being remembered, Brady?
I have some sympathy with that position. Like, celebrity is not important, but the idea of thinking that the thing you did results in you being remembered, I think is a strong human emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Not even necessarily for the vanity of wanting to be remembered, but being remembered is almost just like proof or vindication that the thing you did was good. If the thing you did wasn't good, well, of course it won't be remembered. If the thing you did was good, well, maybe it deserves to be remembered. So it's almost like that's the smoking gun, that the thing you did was good. That's not necessarily true, but it is an easy idea to be seduced by.
I find the concept of people wanting to be remembered dumb and silly, but I do try to translate it into my head into exactly what you've said there. It's like, you don't literally mean you hope that you're remembered. You mean you want to have done or made something that people remember. And then that's, like you said, it's a verification that if not that it's good, it had an impact. You are remembered for something that you have done. You haven't just appeared and disappeared on Earth. And as soon as you're gone, only your family and friends remember you. And then when they're gone, nobody even knew that you were here. That's what I try to translate it into. But it does always just sound to me kind of dumb when people are like, I want to be remembered. Like, well, but you'll be dead. It won't matter to you. What people are aiming for is the work. They want to write a book that people are still reading after they're dead, that kind of thing.
But celebrity in itself is seductive. Obviously, it seduces humans. There's plenty of evidence of that. So there is something nice about recognition and fame that, you know, attracts a lot of people.
It does attract a lot of people. It is a thing that makes me concerned, though, with, not exactly to go against what I was saying before, but about how there are jobs that you don't need anybody's permission to do. One of those jobs is, I'm just a person on YouTube who makes videos and is a vlogger. I think, as we've discussed a couple of times, that is one of the reasons why, if you, like, I've seen increasing surveys of, like, what do young people want to do? And the numbers just keep going up and up. Like, the answer is that they want to be a famous person on YouTube. Like, that is what it is.
Mm.
Like, that is the flip side of it. Like, I think that's just bad. Like, I think it's really bad in terms of just expectations that, sure, people always wanted to be rock stars and famous people, but maybe it's not good for people to grow up feeling like it's so much more within your grasp. Whereas before the existence of, I'm Instagram famous and that's what I do was a job, these people could recognize, like, oh, I would love to be famous, but I can't be a singer and I'm not good enough on the sports team. And so I'm going to be a doctor instead and I'm going to save people's lives, like, or whatever it is.
Are you suggesting, because if you are, I agree with you, that the problem with YouTube fame and Instagram fame and things like that, as opposed to being a successful musician or a successful athlete, is you don't necessarily actually need to be good at anything to be famous anymore? Like, to be Michael Jordan, you had to be really good at basketball. And maybe it's not quite as true with things like music, but generally, to be like a successful musician, you had to be a really good musician. But it seems like a lot of the people who are, some of the people who gain a lot of success on YouTube, you might disagree with me on this, but aren't necessarily particularly exceptional at anything.
I would disagree a little bit. There's two factors. The bar for what is necessary to be famous and successful at it is lower, for sure, just because of the technological developments and because of audience fragmentation. Hmm. So you can be a particular kind of person who's famous within a group of 300,000 people. But rewind the clock 40 years ago, and you were either known by millions of people or you were known by no one.
It was all or nothing.
Yeah, there was no middle ground here.
Yeah.
So the middle ground has opened up, which has lowered the bar for what is your technical skill.
So people like you and I can go to the Rocket Center for a night and spend one night being famous and then be anonymous again.
Yeah, that's totally true. Yeah. But, like, rewind the clock 40 years and neither you nor I would have any kind of audience at all. It just wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
But I think it is important to say that a lot of the people who seem like they're total idiots and are famous for nothing, they're more talented and more clever than you think they are. I don't go along with the idea that many people have, like, they're famous for nothing. Like, or they're just a total idiot who got lucky. Even people who seem real dumb have little moments where I feel like you can see through the veil for a moment. And you're like, you're not quite what you're portraying yourself as, or you have skills that are non-obvious to the people who are watching and you just seem like an idiot. But it's very easy to be an idiot, but it's not as easy to be an idiot in a funny and entertaining way, right? Like, even that is a kind of skill. I think that the perniciousness is more, that many more people can feel like celebrity is within arm's reach. And maybe that's a much more frustrating situation to be in. And it can leave more people feeling like there's lottery tickets lying around everywhere, but for some reason they just got unlucky and weren't able to grab one. And it's the illusion of closeness of that that might be bad for people. I do worry about it, though. And every time I see one of those surveys of, like, everybody in high school wants to be a YouTuber, I feel like it seems really bad, but maybe I'm overly concerned. I don't know.
You and I think, still, at some level, disagree about the role that luck plays in success in the kind of our YouTube world. But
how do you think we disagree?
I think you think it's not luck. Like, most of the people who are successful have something about them that means they've kind of earned it or come close to earning it. And I sometimes think lots of people probably could have had it and a few lucky ones got it. By the way, my wife agrees with you. But, like, you know, we talk about this all the time too. I think, oh, I just got lucky, didn't I? She's like, no, it's not luck. But I feel like luck plays a role. But, you know, I prefer, like, your version, because that makes me feel special. But
to go back to it, I want to be clear, like, that's why I think poker is a good analogy for life. That, like, I am not saying that there isn't luck. But what I am saying is, like, you can be lucky in terms of like poker games. The thing that I think is interesting to note is someone who has a career for a long time and people still think, like, oh, they're just a lucky idiot. And it's like, well, I'm less convinced by that kind of thing where it's like, oh, someone's had a career on YouTube and they've had a career for 5 years and 6 years. At a certain point, I think it's like, we have to make the judgment that, like, they have a skill and they're leveraging that skill. But I totally agree that I'm not saying everyone on YouTube who is successful is there because they're skilled. I'm simply saying I think that there is more invisible skills than people estimate. Luck is still a part of it.
Yeah.
Like, I see a thing where people do then say it's all luck, and I think that breeds a weird kind of resentment. That's not good. Like, the people who think it's all luck strike me as angrier people most of the time. I don't put you in this category at all, but just when I have conversations, people think, like, they're like, oh, people are just lucky entirely. It's a sensible position to be more angry, but I think they're invisible skills that are non-obvious to people. And from knowing a lot of people who are successful, I find it interesting that a lot of them tend to really downplay their own skills. They almost are propagating a world of like, oh, I was very lucky, because that's much easier to say than, oh, I was very skilled.
Like a sort of a false humility, or?
Yeah, a kind of false humility. But it's a thing that I'm aware of, that, like, people are very quick to say publicly, oh, I was just very lucky. And of course, everybody who's living in the first world is already, like, very lucky. I think it hides a certain truth sometimes from people who are looking at the jobs from afar. And that also leads to this feeling of, like, oh, it's just within arm's reach.
I was at a bar the other day in New York, and I was talking to this guy from Scotland. He was at the bar buying drinks for his family. He was, like, a bit older than me. He said, like, what do you do for a job? We were just chatting. I was like, oh, make YouTube videos. And he's like, oh, my son loves YouTube videos. He's always on YouTube. He wants to be a YouTuber, et cetera, et cetera. And then he asked me normal questions. What are your videos about?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I said, oh, mathematics and science, and I do this and that. We spoke for 2 or 3 minutes. And then his son, who was the huge YouTube fan, came up to the bar to stand next to him. And he says to his son, oh, see this guy here I'm talking to? He's a YouTuber. And the young guy looks at me. First thing he says, how many subscribers have you got? I was like, oh, well, I've got a few different channels, but my biggest channel's got, like, you know, about 2.5 million. And then then he sort of went, cool, nodded, like, right, yeah, I approve. And then he walked away. Didn't ask what the channel was, what it was about. But the only thing that mattered was, are you legit? Have you got subscribers? And I've spoken to other people, like, a few times I've been with people with their kids, and it's come up that I make YouTube videos or they're talking about their kids. And they're saying, yeah, Billy wants to be a YouTuber. And this woman was saying, she sits and she eavesdrops on them, because all three or four of them all want to be YouTubers.
Mm.
And they sit around in the lounge talking about their plans, cooking their plans to become YouTubers. And she said, all they talk about is ways to get subscribers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not usually through content. It's not if we made an incredible video that people enjoy, this will like grow our brand and we'll become. They're always just thinking of tricks and ways to game the system and get subscribers, because that's all they equate success to. And it's become the whole like, it's all this number, even though, you know, we've talked to the cows come home about what an irrelevant number that is. Mm. But it's really interesting to me now that it's like, it's become the metric of success as well.
Mm.
Not millions of dollars, not having a Mercedes or a Rolls Royce. It's like, this is the way I'll measure how good I am, where I belong in the pecking order of the universe.
And you were approved as legit by that teenager who came by.
I was legit. He still didn't say, what are you called? And I want to check you out. It was just like, you know, I was so taken aback that that was the question and the only question.
Right. That is a strange experience. Mm. I feel like I've been very down on things, but I would still say, like, if you want to go for it, like, go for it and make YouTube videos. Like, give it a shot. Mm. But it's also a thing where you should expect to see actual positive feedback over not necessarily in a crazy long time horizon.
Yeah,
I've always said that, where it's like, I can't think of any YouTube channel I've ever seen where if you go back and you watch their first videos... First videos aren't often good, but there's something there. You can see that there's like a spark of something there. And that's what you get positive feedback for. It's like people don't expect them to be the best, but...
Also, if you have ambitions to be a YouTuber or a filmmaker or work in television or anything like that, it is getting to a stage now where it kind of... You should be making YouTube videos.
Hmm.
Because someone was saying to me the other day, like, he started as a TV intern and went and applied for a job at the BBC many, many years ago. And they said, yeah, you've got something. We're going to teach you how to make TV.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, if I went to that job interview now and they said, tell us about yourself, prove to us that you're interested in TV. If he'd sat there and said, oh, I've never made a YouTube video or I've never done anything like that, you'd be laughed out of the interview as not being serious about it. Like, I think there's an expectation now. If you want to work in this field, like... If you sit there with some film director or with the BBC or NBC or something asking for a job working in television and you haven't been dabbling now when editing software is affordable, cameras are affordable, you can make films on your phone, like the question could legitimately be asked, are you serious about this as a job? You haven't even been trying and all this stuff's so easy to do now. So if you're legit and want to do this as a job, I would say you should probably be dabbling. Just to prove an interest.
I never even thought about that. But yeah, I guess that makes total sense that in the world of media, it's not even a positive thing. It's basically the minimum requirement.
Yeah.
Oh, you want to work here? Show us that you actually have an interest in doing this thing.
Well, Gray, we're running out of time, but I think we should open a couple more because like there are so many that are unopened. Oh, I like this one's got a nice wax seal on it.
This one, I have a nice little card that's asking about countries' animal symbols.
Hmm.
So... America, everybody knows it's the bald eagle. Ukraine has a bear. Scotland is a unicorn. What's Australia's national animal? I don't know.
Well, on the national crest of Australia, they have an emu and a kangaroo, or an emu, as you would say.
Right.
Gray famously said the word emu in one of his videos that I still can't get over the shock of. An emu and a kangaroo, each are holding... like the shield in place.
Right.
And supposedly those two animals are chosen because they're two animals that can't like step backwards very easily. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's an urban myth, but everyone says it.
Those two are the national animal? Australia hasn't picked one? Hasn't decided?
They must have picked one. I don't know.
Right, which would you go with? I would
confidently bet that the national animal of Australia is a kangaroo.
Okay. How do you feel about that? Don't check it. Don't reach for your phone.
I want to know now. I've put my cards on the table. How do I feel about it?
Yeah.
Completely the right decision.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what everyone in the world would expect it to be. What do you think about having the eagle?
It's awesome. It's an awesome bird.
Yeah, it is an awesome bird.
Come on. That's why America puts that bald eagle on everything, right? All the military stuff, everything gets the bald eagle. The post office.
It looks like it's both. I'm looking here at some list here of national animals and it says the red kangaroo and the emu. So it looks like they didn't decide. National animals. I'm going to give you a couple of other countries, see if you can guess their national animal. You ready?
Okay.
Austria.
A bear?
They have a type of eagle and also a barn swallow.
Oh, I should have thought of it. Yeah, right. Yeah,
oh, that's okay. A national bird, the barn
should have
swallow.
Thought of the eagle.
No, sorry. The red kangaroo is the national animal of Australia and the emu is just the national bird.
Hmm.
They often list a national animal and a national bird, but only those two. Canada, animal of Canada?
The maple tree.
You should get this.
Should I?
It is equally cliched.
Oh, it's not a moose, is it?
No, no. Okay. That would have been a good guess too.
What is it?
It's the North American beaver.
Oh, of course.
China.
A dragon.
It is.
Oh my God, okay.
Also the panda though. They're both okay. National animals.
I was going for like the most Chinese thing I could think of. Like, can you have an imaginary animal as your animal? I guess you can.
Yeah.
Scroll down to the US because I think that the national animal may be the American bison and that the bald eagle is the national bird.
The bald eagle is the national bird. The American bison is the national mammal.
Oh.
So I don't know what to think about.
Well, that. If they don't list another national animal, then the bison then gets to be the national animal. Yeah. They're awesome. We got some pretty kick-ass animals.
Tanzania's got the giraffe, which is awesome.
That's pretty good. I don't mean to distract you, Brady, but I have a very important question here,
yeah.
Which is, what is the best tasting Christmas cookie shape?
Cookie shape?
Yeah. So you get Christmas cookies.
Yeah.
They come in different shapes.
Yeah. What would you pick?
Suggested shapes such as gingerbread people, tree, snowman, candy cane, stocking.
Are we assuming that the flavor is the same and which shape do I want to
eat? Yeah, the flavor is the same.
Yeah.
It's like a Christmas cookie.
Yeah, but what shape would I pick?
Is the most delicious?
The Christmas tree.
Christmas tree, yeah, clearly. Yeah. There's no other answer to that.
Right.
How is it even a debate?
I'm glad we agree on that.
Christmas tree.
I've never seen us agree on anything so wholeheartedly. Look at this for a lovely picture on this card that's been sent.
Oh, wow. They've made a wreath out of the nail and gear. Yeah. That looks really nice.
So the gear part is like a wreath with like, you know, red berries and green, and the nail goes across. That's a very clever Christmas design. Hi, Brady and Gray. Praise first. We always like they write praise first. That's not me saying praise first.
Oh, okay.
It just says praise first. I absolutely adore the podcasts. You often contribute to making my work more bearable. Well, you actually make it enjoyable. That's nice. My Christmas question for you is, if you were to write a book, what kind of book would you write? This is from Sophie in Denmark. Please hug the dogs from me. What would you, if you're going to write a book?
Oh, like, this is like asking me the PhD topic that I would do, right? It's like, I sure would love to have written a book, but I have a difficulty making it to the end of my 1,500 word scripts.
Yeah.
And I can't conceive of being able to write a book-length project. I just wouldn't make it.
Did you ever write stories when you were young? Did you write little novels and things?
Oh, yeah. But this is one of the, what I think of like key things in life is understanding your limitations.
Yeah.
And I remember making a very conscious decision at one point in life going, you know what? This fiction, this isn't going anywhere.
You know,
this isn't going to work out for you, buddy.
Yeah.
You need to stop this. And I did. Like I stopped and I never wrote anything again after that point. Like yeah. It was a Christmas in college. Like I remember it so clearly.
Right. So you were older. It wasn't like you were a boy writing like a...
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You thought, okay, I've got the great American novel in me. And
yeah. It was like a thing that I was tinkering with. And it was an intercession at college. And I remember the particular library and I decided to give it like a real go.
Yeah.
And like, let me actually try this for a while. Like, because it's a thing I've been tinkering with.
Yeah.
And then I looked at it and I was like, well, I've made a clear decision. Yeah. This is a bad idea.
Can you give me one nugget, one thing about that book, like a character's name?
I honestly don't even remember what it was. I just remember that I like set aside a bunch of time and was trying to work on stuff and was like, this is all terrible.
Knowing you just spent the whole time like making lists and checklists and structures and stuff. I never actually wrote an actual word.
No, I remember it. Like I remember writing stuff, but it was not good. I mean, so if I had to do something, I would nonfiction immediately.
Yeah.
But I just don't think I have the patience for a book length project in me.
It's tough. It's a tough gig.
What about you, Brady? History of Adelaide?
Probably not. I would love to write a novel, but I don't think I have it. Like, I don't know if I'm good at it. Probably not.
Mm.
But when I have like dabbled and written a few pages, I've looked at it and been like a bit embarrassed. Like, like who would want to read stuff that I've made up? And maybe it's just because it's so terrible. So utterly terrible. So let me ask you this as our final question. This isn't a question from a card, but this is a question.
Okay.
What are we going to do with all these cards full of questions we haven't answered and messages we haven't read?
Yeah. We still have bags of Christmas cards.
Yeah.
I think 12 days of Hello Internet is just not enough Hello Internet for the people. They need more.
There's not going to be an episode tomorrow, is there?
But okay, but yeah. So listen, you now have probably been spoiled with a bunch of Hello Internets in a row.
Spoiled? You mean spammed?
So we're going to resume our regularly scheduled random programming.
Yeah.
But I think we should revisit some of the unopened cards at some point in the future.
Not too distant future as well, because that would be, you know.
Yeah, but like genuinely, people have like, it's been so nice reading all of these things, and people have put a lot of effort into these cards, and there's like so many things we can't possibly even have mentioned on the show. A card I really like that I'll just mention at the end here, which summarizes things, is a picture of us at Christmas time, but the Christmas tree is falling on top of me, which hasn't happened in reality. It's been looming here every day that I've come to visit. So yeah. Like, there's so many details we can't possibly mention, but I think we should give another go to these, some of the cards that are remaining.
Yeah.
Because it's been so much, and I'd like to try to do some more because of all the effort people have put into this.
But don't send any more because we've drawn a line under it.
No more coming in.
Yeah.
The bags that are here at Brady's house, that's the end of it.
Yeah.
But it's been really fun going through all these Christmas cards. And genuinely, thank you to everyone for sending them in.
Yeah. Thank you. And thank you for enjoying our 12 days of Hello Internet.
Merry Christmas, Brady.
Well, that was days ago now. That was like 12 days ago.
No one knows.
Oh, okay.
Are we keeping up this charade or are we not keeping up this charade? I don't even know.
Well, then you're wishing me a Merry Christmas for like a few days' time then. I'm so confused.
We've caused a time paradox.
So we've just ripped the space-time continuum.
Yeah, quick. Abort, abort, abort.